Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today we open our show with an update on the devastating Border 2 fire that has prompted widespread evacuations across East County and parts of the South Bay, along with updates on other fires burning in Southern California. Our newsmaker interview today is with David Gravois, a survivor of the Eaton Fire in Los Angeles. Then we'll be airing President Joe Biden's farewell speech, in which he warned about the rising power of oligarchs threatening our democracy. We'll also have updates on two of the many executive actions that Donald Trump took on his first day in office, including slashing diversity, equity, and inclusion policies across the federal government, ironically, on Martin Luther King Day. But a court has issued a temporary injunction blocking Trump's order to end birthright citizenship, an action that the judge called blatantly unconstitutional. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is Miriam Raftery with an update on the Border 2 fire, which as of our show taping deadline Friday afternoon has burned over 5,289 acres and is 10% contained. It is currently the fourth largest fire burning in California. The fire started Thursday on Otay Mountain. Evacuation orders and warnings are in effect, including portions of the Otay, Jazeera, and Jamul areas. An overnight shelter for evacuees has been opened at Cuyamaca College in Rancho San Diego. Numerous schools are closed due to the fire, high winds, and/or power outages, including those near the border fire, but also schools in Warner Springs, Borrego Springs, and the Mountain Empire School Districts. As of Friday afternoon, SDG&E reports over 19,000 customers are without power in dozens of local communities, with another 63,000 at risk of losing power due to public power safety shutoffs aimed at preventing fires. The sheriff has closed its Otay Mesa area jails and detention facilities, with inmates sheltering in place for now, though an evacuation plan is in effect if that becomes needed, the sheriff assures. The Border 2 fire is the largest in San Diego County, though smaller fires this week forced evacuations in Valley Center, Mission Valley, Rancho Bernardo, and La Jolla near UCSD, and it's only January. Los Angeles has been hardest hit as Southern California endures the longest dry spell without rain this time of year since the 19th century, fueled by hurricane-force winds. Climate change is creating conditions for more severe firestorms, with a fire season that is now year-round. Estimated damages from the L.A. fires are now more than $250 billion, making this one of the costliest natural disasters in U.S. history. The Palisades fire, which started in Pacific Palisades and scorched over 23,000 acres, has killed 11 people and destroyed over 6,800 homes and other structures, but it's now 77% contained. The Eaton fire is now 95% contained after burning over 14,000 acres in Altadena and Pasadena. It killed 14 people, destroying over 94,000 structures. The Hughes fire near Castaic Lake has burned over 10,000 acres, but it is now 56% contained. Causes of all these fires remain under investigation. Next up, we'll be interviewing a homeowner who will be describing their dramatic escape from the deadly Eaton fire in Altadena.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice. Today, we're going to be talking about the LA wildfires, specifically the Eaton Fire, which started on January 7th in Altadena and has burned over 14,000 acres as of our show taping here on January 21st. It has destroyed over 9,000 homes and other buildings, damaging over 1,000 more. 17 people have lost their lives and 8 have been injured, including civilians and firefighting personnel.
The fire is now 89% contained, and it may be the most expensive natural disaster in U.S. history. My very special guest today is David Garvois, who is a survivor of that fire. He's evacuated from the Eaton fire and is staying actually right now with our station's founder, Martin Eder, while he's waiting for the all clear to go back home. So, David, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for taking time to join us when you're going through so much.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here. I have a little bit of a cold, so forgive me for sounding so hoarse.
That's okay. I do too, but you've been through all that smoke, which I'm sure must make it much worse.
Right.
So what have you learned about the status, first of all, of your own house and your property and your immediate neighborhood?
Yeah, well, miraculously, I live five blocks away from where the Eaton Canyon fire started. It was identified on Midwick and Altadena Drive at an intersection that I walk to in order to access Eaton Canyon from my home. And somehow, and there was an article actually in the LA Times, I think, or maybe it was the Pasadena paper, about how it carved out like a U shape. When the fire got started, it went down the wash. There's like a wash where the riverbed runs out.
Yeah.
Went down to Kineola Mesa. And then it went to the left, to the west. It kind of went above and then went across Allen Avenue, where I'm on Allen and New York Avenue. It jumped Allen Avenue and then went south. So somehow I'm half a block over to the left, or, you know, or to the west, it's burned. And then two blocks up, it's burned. So somehow my neighborhood, immediate in the Altadena Midlothian neighborhood, we just did not get burned. There's a few houses. It's remarkable, but my post office did burn down. The grocery store I shop at, Aldi's, burned down. Many of the small businesses up on North Lake Street are all gone. So, and I have not driven around all of it. I did on Wednesday after the fire.
Let you back in a little bit.
Yeah, I got back in. So the way I found out about the fire was, just to give you the backstory, I had texted a short video clip to my landlord, Karina and Carter. They live two blocks up on Meadowbrook. That there was a piece of our wooden fence that was blowing quite heavily, and it was in the wind, and I thought it was going to come down and that we needed to, you know, take it apart before it blew off and, you know, cause some damage. And so Carter came over. This is around 4:30 in the afternoon. We disassembled it, and I had woken up very early because the winds started around 5:30 in the morning, and I thought it was rain. It was not rain. It turns out it was wind. And I had a cafe table with an umbrella in it. I thought, well, I better go outside and get that umbrella. And I go outside and it's like kind of warm out.
Oh, no.
And it's 5:30, it's still dark out. I remove the umbrella, go back inside. And so my day went as usual. We had our staff meeting I work at a nonprofit. And then, like I said, at around 4:30, I texted my landlord about this fence issue. They came over, Carter did. We took care of it. And then after we took care of the fence, I was so exhausted, I laid down for a nap. And the next thing I know, my phone's ringing. It's my landlord saying, you got to get out.
Wow.
And
what time was that?
That was around 6 o'clock. So something between 5:30 and
dark
actually,
already,
a little later than that. Actually, about 6:45, I looked at my phone.
So what was 15
minutes after the fire started at 6:30, at 6:45, she called me and said, you got to get out of the house. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm watching the news. I'm watching the news and there's, you know, I see that there's a fire, but I'm like, what are you talking about? The power's on. Mm. She's like, no, it's really bad. You got to get out of the house. And I kind of like, oh, okay. And I started slowly like, well, maybe I should put something together. And then, I called another friend from work and we saw the glow of the fire out our windows. She lives in Pasadena. I live in Altadena. And I'm like, wow, this is really serious. And then the power went out and then I got the notification that you got to go.
Yes.
So I was like, this is real. And I grabbed a bunch of, you know, tools, my things that are kind of expensive and could be used for rebuilding.
Good thought. So you didn't have a go bag ready, but you just kind of grabbed what you could.
Kind of grabbed what I could and threw it in my back of my car. And then I have two elderly women. It's a triplex. It's a house with three units. And the woman on my right, she left with her dog and nothing else. Mm. And then my other neighbor, Gloria, she kept going back in her house to grab more stuff. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the trees in our yard were starting on fire. Mm. at the tops that were burning. And I'm like, Glory, I'm not pulling out until you get in your car and pull out with me.
Good
I'm
for you.
Freaking out. And yeah, so she got in her car, got in mine, and we drove out. And, you know, I'm in a constant chat with my two neighbors, the landlord.
Was it smoky? Could you see? I mean, were there sparks
smoky,
flying around? Or
very smoky, sparks flying around everywhere. You know, just, I just couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. All the fire trucks rushing up.
Terrifying.
Yeah, it was truly. And I grew up in Oklahoma where we have tornadoes. Mm-hmm. This had that quality of like panic, of like mm-hmm. the winds, but throw in flame.
These fires were unusual in that they were actually driven by hurricane force winds, every bit as strong 100%. As you would see in some of those Midwest tornadoes, but coupled with the added danger of fire.
They had clocked a 99-mile-an-hour gust off of the mountaintop, the San Gabriel Mountains right there where I live. But the average, I mean, it was going 40, 60 miles an hour. So when it would hit something, the flames would kind of turn whatever was lit into a blowtorch because this is blowing on it. It would catch the next thing behind it on fire and it would just keep feeding itself. So yeah, miraculously, we have a wood shingle roof.
That's amazing.
It's a 20-year-old roof. Wow. I mean, the trees were on fire. I could send you pictures of the trees singed. Mm-hmm. I just can't believe this place survived.
Wow. You were very, very, very lucky, it sounds like.
Yeah. Our neighborhood was very lucky.
Yeah. I know here our publisher lost his house in the Cedar Fire in 2003. And it was similar in that there was high winds and extreme, you know, heat from those fires. They say it was almost as hot as Hiroshima. And it actually melted his steel framed house, which was built to withstand anything and didn't. So,
yeah.
A wood shingle house.
The firemen, I was watching a report, the firemen saw the aluminum in cars that melted had melted and pooled.
Wow.
In the driveway of a house. You know, right. So yeah, the fires were extremely hot.
How did you feel about the response from both from local, state, and federal firefighters?
I think the response was overwhelming. I think they did the best they could. It was a pyrrhic victory. I don't know. I don't know what they could have done to save everything. I mean, it's just, I can't imagine what that was like.
Yeah.
For them to face that. And I do know that there was, a late night, like 3:25 a.m. notification of the folks going out in Western Altadena. Mm-hmm. That's where a lot of the deaths were identified.
Did you know any of the people?
I did not know. I do have a friend who burnt her house burned down. But I don't know anybody who died. And I feel like it was just, who knew that this was going to be like this?
I don't know specifically which were Eaton Fire and which were Paradise, but a lot of the people who died were people who had chosen to stay behind and try to fight the fire to save their house, which, while understandable, is generally not a good idea because this happens all too tragically often. But also there were a couple of disabled people that couldn't get out. And in one case, a mother who stayed behind with a disabled adult son in a wheelchair. She had a broken arm and couldn't get out. So it's just really tragic stories, as well as some first responders who lost their lives. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, not at all. Saying. Not at all. Yeah, no, it kind of reminds me of, I lived through 9/11. I was living in New York City and I had just left my job in the World Trade Center on the 54th floor to become a New York City public school teacher through the New York City Teaching Fellows Program. And I remember when the first plane hit the World Trade Towers, I was like, no one knew what was happening. And then the second plane hit and then the Pennsylvania. And it was, so it had that feeling of this complete out of control. This is unprecedented. We don't know what's going on. I feel so terrible for people who work in in disaster relief, who are in the, responsible for making those notifications, getting those people up and awake and out of their houses. Yeah. I hate to see the blame game happening.
I was going to ask you how you felt about President Trump blaming California for these fires not raking the forest
I'm
or something.
So sorry.
And then he's pulling us out of the Paris Climate Accord when all the scientific evidence indicates that climate change is fueling bigger and worse wildfires.
Yeah, I'm incredulous. I really don't know what to say. I, you know, right now, Houston, which is the oil capital of the United States, is having, I think, a winter storm.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is very unusual for Houston to have that kind of sub-zero temperatures. Mm-hmm. You'd think that would be a wake up for them. And of course, the wildfires and, you know, it was the hottest year on record.
Absolutely.
Again, I don't know what it's going to take for folks who supported Trump to realize that we're charting a course of disaster.
Yeah, he's actually talked about, or at least his Project 2025 has talked about getting rid of FEMA, which provides the disaster relief. And he's has threatened to withhold disaster relief from blue states that didn't vote for him, like California. Now, whether he actually does it or not, we'll have to see. Apparently, he's contemplating a visit to the LA fire scenes.
Yeah, I hope. I mean, hope springs eternal. I'm hoping that his visit to these fires will humanize him somehow, that he will see. I mean, the devastation.
Yeah,
it's just it's a moonscape. It looks like Hiroshima. It looks like a bomb hit.
That,
you know, I was talking to a friend earlier. You know, I'm a kid. I'm 55. Mm-hmm. I grew up in the 80s. Where you remember The Morning After, that movie?
Yeah.
The Morning After. I remember watching that about nuclear holocaust. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is our morning after. You know, this natural disasters are going to be, you know, forget nuclear holocaust. It's we have to worry about our own man-made climate catastrophe.
You know, we've heard a lot about the very wealthy neighborhoods that were devastated in places like Malibu. But I think it's a myth that all the victims of these fires were, you know, millionaires who can afford to rebuild. Tell us about the people in your community and the history.
Altadena, you know, is known for being a diverse community. 18% of the population is of color. Mm-hmm. And has a historical Black community there that was completely burned out.
Oh gosh.
You know, when they put the 210 freeway in, they rammed it right through their neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And then now there's this fire. And I just hope that they can rebuild. I'm really worried that the Altadena was such a special place in terms of its diversity and its funkiness. And it didn't feel like the rest of LA. I'm involved in Toastmasters, which is the public speaking group. Pasadena Club 6.
My husband is active in that.
You know about it, yeah. So anyway, I know a lot of people in Toastmasters. I was a member of Neighborhood Unitarian Universalist Church, and I'm at Troop Unitarian over on Del Mar and I'm forgetting the other cross street. Anyway, it's, you know, I have a lot of friends and in the community and, I'm worried what this is going to do for all of us. On the one hand, I do hope we can build more high density housing. Mm-hmm. I don't think we should necessarily build back the same.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly the same. I think we do need to think about, you know, near the transit centers where we try to build more high density housing. I mean, I don't know. I would get in a lot of hot water because I'm not a true Altadenan. You know, I've only lived there for a year.
I know typically in these scenarios, we hear worries on the one hand that things may become, you know, gentrified and that the poor folks that used to live there may not be able to afford to buy there in the future. And on the other hand, sometimes things can come back in some ways better with perhaps an opportunity to re-envision things like parks that were lost and build back better than before. But there's always the sadness of those people who were not insured, were underinsured, you know, maybe they qualify for FEMA funds, maybe they don't get enough. So it's just kind of a wait and see. But that said,
Judy Chu did say at one of the community meetings that FEMA, she had gotten Biden to, before he left office, to agree that usually, I guess, FEMA pays up to 70% of your
expenses. He's saying we pay 100%.
So can that be changed now that Trump's in office?
Yes. Exactly. Because Biden did say he hoped that Trump would honor that, but it remains to be seen. And I believe that was just for the firefighting costs. So it wasn't necessarily all of the rebuilding everything. I think
she said that if, you know, you haven't, Judy put it this way, if you have insurance, but it doesn't cover, there's a gap between the true cost of rebuilding and what your insurance covers, we'll fill that gap in. But you just have to give us the document, you know, to prove it to us. That's what she said.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that's the case because anybody who is underinsured or not insured.
Yeah. You mentioned you're involved with the LA Neighborhood Land Trust, which partners with Boeing, and I understand they're providing some help, as are some other.
Yeah, they've donated a bunch of money. It's amazing because they've really been in the soup, Boeing. Yeah, I don't have the whole number. It's an email, but yeah, I'm in touch with them. They support the Los Angeles Neighborhood Land Trust with a grant, an unrestricted grant for us to support our building parks and gardens, community gardens,
Yes.
and areas that have been victims of discriminatory land use practices, decades and decades long worth of discriminatory land use practices. So
And so now they're helping with the fire
fire relief. I
situation.
think everybody, in fact, I had a meeting earlier today with the Corporate Giving Network, which is a friend of mine, Joy Stevens, started. It's basically a trying to help build bridges between our corporate entities and our nonprofits by creating an organized, meeting where we can have like a general assembly, if you will.
Yeah.
And we had a meeting today, and unfortunately, because of everyone in the LA market has been is dealing with a lot of other stuff, it was only just the two of us on the call today because I was hoping to get some intel from some of our corporations on how they're reacting to this
Yeah. I do
with
have a
their
couple of
budgets
funds.
and stuff.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, nothing. Go ahead.
I do have information on a fund or two to help the California or the Los Angeles wildfire victims. If any of our audience out there today would like to donate, perhaps. The Pasadena Community Foundation has started a relief fund that's specifically for Eaton Fire survivors, the one that David was through here. And you can find that information on their website at PasadenaCF.org. That stands for Pasadena Community Foundation. Also, the League of California Community Foundations has links on its page where you could donate to help people impacted by all of the fires. They have a separate fund for each one, and that's at LCCF.org for League of California Community Foundations. David, are there other entities that you recommend people consider
Actually, yeah,
donating
I'm
to?
really glad you asked because there's one that was mentioned today in our staff meeting for the Land Trust. My friend Diana Campos Jimenez, who's in charge of our community gardens. We have nine community gardens throughout LA and South
Nice.
LA. It's an organization that I have not heard of called Inclusive Action. Let me just look it up really fast.
Okay, go
Yeah,
ahead.
Inclusive Action for the City is a community development organization whose mission is to bring people together to design, build, and promote sustainable something, something. So I know there are a lot of people. One of the people that she referenced is, I'm not sure if they're DACA or undocumented, but they're out of work
Ah.
cleaning homes. And she asked us at our staff meeting, like, does anybody know or have any work that she's worried she needs a job?
Good
Right.
job.
So, and I guess Inclusive Action is doing some effort, I guess, to raise
Very
money
good.
to give
I'm
relief.
thinking too about homeless people that might have been camped out in some of those hills and what on earth is going to happen to them when
Yeah,
they've
we didn't have
lost
a lot of,
absolutely everything.
I mean, there was one report that they're concerned that it was the homeless that were camping out with open fire, with cigarettes, found this one hiker in Eden Canyon found cigarette butts and spotted what had been a fire, right? So we don't have a lot of homeless. I don't know what it is. I guess it's too far away, but Altadena, really, there's no
So
homeless
it's
in
not as
Altadena.
much
You
of an
don't
issue
really,
there.
you don't, I'm not, that's not fair. There are probably unhoused people, but
Right.
they're just not very visible. And Pasadena also, it's a very small, as a percentage of the homeless
Not
population
like
in Los
downtown
Angeles.
LA or some other
There's
areas.
about, I mean, I've the figure 75,000 homeless or unhoused is the figure that is often quoted. I see the city has one of about 45,000
Yeah.
of unhoused. Yeah.
You raised a good point, though, about people, whether they're undocumented or even documented, the folks whose living depended on things like cleaning houses or maybe the gardeners and the landscapers for those houses. They're all going to be hard hit by this, as well as the people who lost homes. And in some cases, it may be both. People may have lost their homes and their livelihoods if they lived
Yeah.
in communities where they
Yeah.
worked.
Yeah, that's one of the things about Altadena is that a lot of the people, the small businesses on North Lake Street, live and work in Altadena. So their business was destroyed and their home was destroyed. So they are truly at zero.
Oh my goodness.
I just,
Was
yeah.
there a downtown district there that was sort of the heart of the community?
North Lake Street was like you know, kind of the main drag where Aldi's was and the post office was and little shops. There was this, I wish I remember the name of it. It was an African drumming place where I went to this vegan cafe next door to it and I sat. And then all of a sudden this drumming circle formed to my right of me and it was so amazing. And I was just like, wow, this is, and again, I've only been in Altadena for a year. So
and it's gone.
I don't have like deep connections,
things, but are those
I was
lost?
Like, wow, this is fun. You know, what a cool place. You
what
know, to
happened?
Have
are those places? Did they?
Oh, burn? They're gone. They burned down.
How hard?
Yeah, are yeah, they're totally gone.
Having been through this nightmare of the fire and having to evacuate with basically no notice, what advice would you give to anybody listening out there, our San Diego readers included, where we've got a couple of small fires burning as we're taping this?
For sure.
What advice would you give, you know, to prepare? In hindsight, is there anything you would have done differently?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think I did not have a go bag. I did not have myself ready for this at all. When I moved into this apartment, I moved to California in May of 23, right? Mm-hmm. No, yes, May of 23. Here we are in 2025. I just didn't take it seriously. I figured when I moved into Altadena, I was like, oh, I'm far enough away from any wildfire risk. I really didn't think it was an issue. Felt too urban. I was wrong. And
look at
with
Malibu,
calamitous,
that fire there burned all the way to the ocean.
So yeah.
I think
so. We
no
really have
safe,
to.
Really.
Yeah, there's no safe place. And so don't think you're safe. Get your go bag together. Mm-hmm. You know, have your documents ready. Have an extra set of car keys. Have your numbers. You know where you're going to stay. I was driving down Lake Avenue. Everyone was trying to get down, which goes down from the mountain down, or excuse me, I was on Allen, and I'm, you know, all the car streets on the side streets are trying to pull in and I'm trying to let cars in. Yeah. Everyone, you know, like I'm trying to be fair, right? I'm not just going to keep
things people
nobody.
Don't think about is having a substantial amount of cash on hand.
Yeah.
In your house, in your purse, in case, or in your wallet, in your car, in case you're caught out when a fire starts and you can't get back home. And when the power goes out, very often, if your car is on empty, they've had cases of nobody could evacuate because there's gridlock on some of these, you know, two-lane highways.
Right.
And if the power goes out, the pumps, you know, credit cards don't work at gas stations and so forth or restaurants.
Yeah.
So that's something a lot of people don't think about, but have that with you and your insurance information and make sure you, if you have it, you know, that you have renter insurance that you have.
I did not have renter's insurance.
Yeah.
And I just was like, I wish I'd had. Now my landlord has insurance, obviously, and she's prorating our rent for the days we're not able to live in the house, which is lovely. And she, she's applying for insurance and I qualify for FEMA. I get $770 so I can pay Martin.
That's good.
My host.
I just read that CalFresh, if you lost food, well, I don't know about the fire, but I know with power outages or disasters in general, you can get compensated for lost food maybe that was in your refrigerator that spoiled when the power goes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm by myself. I'm single and I've got some savings. So I was able to ride this out. You know, I'm resourceful, but I did not have renter's insurance, which I probably should get because I've had it before when I lived in Brooklyn, New York, and it's not that expensive. It's like,
well, and tragically, I believe it was State Farm had canceled the insurance on a bunch of people within a month of these fires starting. And I'm sure in the middle of winter, a lot of people probably thought there was no rush to get replacement insurance or they couldn't afford the FAIR program. So they got caught.
Yeah. There were three, and I guess there were three big insurance companies that have exited California.
Wow.
From one news report I read. Yeah.
So, in the last couple of years, that has happened. So it's, and I'm sure that is only going to be exacerbated by the most recent disasters up there.
Yeah.
And then even going back, there's, even for people who didn't lose homes, there can be smoke damage. Did you have any issues of that at your property?
Yeah, when I went back to my place on Wednesday, the morning after. So like I spent the night at a friend's place that Tuesday night in near MacArthur Park in Los Angeles. And then at 9:15 in the morning, I got a text from my landlord, who again lives two blocks up, saying, Minoru is the street I live in, Minoru is still standing. However, our house is surrounded on three sides by houses burning right now. We don't know if we're going to make it.
Oh my goodness.
And so anyway, I got to my place, grabbed some things, more things. And then I went over to see them I drove up two blocks, and it was no, there was no National Guard at this point. I was able to just go right up, rolled my window down. Hey, is anyone seeing Carter and Karina? Oh, they're right over there. I didn't know which house was theirs. I just knew if I asked a neighbor, and they were literally like trying to push a wall over. The neighbors had gotten together with two
Oh
by
my gosh.
fours. A house next to theirs had burned down completely, two story house, but the two story wall was just standing by itself.
Oh,
They were worried it could fall one,
and
into
you hurt
their
somebody,
house.
yeah.
So they were trying to push it over. And then I went back to I had a fire extinguisher in my car because there's all these little fires everywhere. And I gave them my fire extinguisher, and then I had one back in my kitchen at my apartment
It's good
in house
preparedness.
that I brought to them. And then a couple cold beers in the fridge that were still cold, and brought them to Carter. And they were so grateful, to have a cold beer and a fire extinguisher after really pulling an all-nighter trying to
Yeah,
save
it
them,
makes you appreciate the little things when you've been
which
doing
is
stuff like
saved,
that.
which is, I'm so glad their house is still standing.
Getting a little air filter, these home air filters that aren't don't cost very much, but I will tell you from the Cedar Fire, they work like wonders. My son had asthma. We put one in each room and we closed the door, and after an hour, the air would be clear. And we literally had like a cloud inside the house from the smoke. It was that bad. So, you
I
know.
haven't bought mine yet. I need to do that. I just wasn't sure where to ship it because my post office is gone,
Oh my
and I
gosh.
wasn't sure about mail delivery. But we're as of Sunday, they're letting us back in. We're no longer in
That's
a
good.
first tier evacuation zone where you have to be out.
Well, that's
We now
good.
can go back. We just,
You can also buy those a lot of times at places like Target or probably
they are gone. Like
gone.
everybody in LA has raided
Amazon has them.
everywhere.
I looked at one for a
You
friend of
have to
mine
go
who's up in
online.
New
Yeah,
York. So
basically you
yeah.
need to ship it because I think
Or
every
anywhere
box
online.
store, big box store has run out of air from what I understand.
Yeah, I know
And
that
then even
happens.
N95s have been low to, from what I understand. It's not as
Wow.
bad as pandemic, but
Well, we
yeah.
certainly wish you well, and
Thank you.
it's I can only imagine how difficult it is to go through an ordeal and then to go home and have your neighborhood forever changed like that. But keep in touch. Let us know how you're doing. Is there
Sure.
anything
Thanks,
else?
Marie.
Yeah, is there
No,
anything else?
I keep voting for folks that believe in climate change. We just have to keep, I wish we had meteorologists that would give the truth and not be sugarcoating. Oh, it's a really lovely day in New York City. It's 50 degrees and it's December. No, it's not lovely if it's 50 degrees in December. I think we need to be, our meteorologists really need to tell the truth that when there's wily weather days, they need to call it. And they
Yeah,
don't do
we've
that.
been breaking high temperature records year after year after year for several years running now. There's some places in the world that have broken all-time temperatures for planet Earth, and then worse and worse, not only the fires, but also hurricanes, because as the oceans warm, it creates the conditions that give rise to more and more devastating hurricanes, tropical storms. It just continues to get worse, and
Yeah,
yet.
this the jet stream issue and the ocean currents, how they're flowing, and that they're saying that jet stream could possibly reverse. I don't know if you've heard this thing, some climate models. I'm just like, we're really playing with fire. We really need to
Literally, literally.
get to it. So we'll see what happens. Thank you
Absolutely.
so much, Miriam. It's
Well, you
nice
are
to talk with
welcome,
you.
David. I appreciate you very much you taking the time to talk with us and share your experience with our listeners and our audience online at eastcountymagazine.org. We will be posting, if you tuned in late, folks, we will be posting the full audio up at eastcountymagazine.org. And we appreciate you taking the time today to join us
Thank
on the East
you.
County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Shortly before the inauguration of Donald Trump, President Joe Biden gave a farewell speech in which he warned of the rising powers of oligarchs threatening our democracy. Echoing similar warnings about a military-industrial complex, once delivered by former General and President Dwight D. Eisenhower. We're going to play Biden's farewell speech for you in its entirety today.
I'm speaking to you tonight from the Oval Office. Before I begin, let me speak to important news from earlier today. After 8 months of nonstop negotiation, by my administration, a ceasefire and a hostage deal has been reached by Israel and Hamas, the elements of which I laid out in great detail in May of this year. This plan was developed and negotiated by my team and will be largely implemented by the incoming administration. That's why I told my team to keep the incoming administration fully informed, because that's how it should be, working together as Americans. This will be my final address to you from the American people, from the Oval Office, from this desk as president. And I've been thinking a lot about who we are, and maybe more importantly, who we should be. Long ago, in New York Harbor, an iron worker installed beam after beam, day after day. He was joined by steel workers, stonemasons, engineers. They built not just a single structure, but a beacon of freedom. The very idea of America was so big, we felt the entire world needed to see. The Statue of Liberty, a gift from France after our Civil War. Like the very idea of America, it was built not by one person, but by many people from every background and from around the world. Like America, the Statue of Liberty is not standing still. Her foot literally steps forward atop a broken chain of human bondage. She's on the march, and she literally moves. She was built to sway back and forth to withstand the fury of stormy weather, to stand the test of time because storms are always coming. She sways a few inches, but she never falls into the current below, an engineering marvel. The Statue of Liberty is also an enduring symbol of the soul of our nation, a soul shaped by forces that bring us together and by forces that pull us apart. And yet through good times and tough times, we've withstood it all. A nation of pioneers and explorers, of dreamers and doers, of ancestors native to this land, of ancestors who came by force, a nation of immigrants who came to build a better life, a nation holding the torch of the most powerful idea ever in the history of the world, that all of us are created equal, that all of us deserve to be treated with dignity, justice and fairness, that democracy must defend and be defined and be imposed, moved in every way possible. Our rights, our freedoms, our dreams. But we know the idea of America, our institution, our people, our values that uphold it are constantly being tested. Ongoing debates about power and the exercise of power. But whether we lead by the example of our power or the power of our example, whether we show the courage to stand up to the abuse of power or we yield to it. After 50 years at the center of all of this, I know that believing in the idea of America means respecting the institutions that govern a free society, the presidency, the Congress, the courts, a free and independent press, institutions that are rooted, not they just might not reflect the timeless words, but they echo the words of the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident. Rooted in the timeless words of the Constitution, we the people. Our system of separation of powers, checks and balances, it may not be perfect, but it's maintained our democracy for nearly 250 years, longer than any other nation in history that's ever tried such a bold experiment. In the past 4 years, our democracy has held strong. And every day I've kept my commitment to be president for all Americans through one of the toughest periods in our nation's history. I've had a great partner in Vice President Kamala Harris. It's been the honor of my life to see the resilience of essential workers getting us through a once-in-a-century pandemic, the heroism of service members and first responders keeping us safe, the determination of advocates standing up for our rights and our freedoms instead of losing their jobs to an economic crisis that we inherited millions of Americans now have the dignity of work. Millions of entrepreneurs and companies creating new businesses and industries, hiring American workers, using American products. And together, we've launched a new era of American possibilities. One of the greatest modernizations of infrastructure in our entire history, from new roads, bridges, clean water, affordable high-speed internet for every American. We invented the semiconductor, smaller than the tip of my little finger, and now is bringing those chip factories and those jobs back to America where they belong, creating thousands of jobs. Finally, giving Medicare the power to negotiate lower prescription drug prices for millions of seniors. And finally, doing something to protect our children and our families by passing the most significant gun safety law in 30 years and bringing violent crime to a 50-year low. Meeting our sacred obligation to over 1 million veterans so far who are exposed to toxic materials and to their families, providing medical care and education benefits and more for their families. You know, it will take time to feel the full impact of all we've done together. But the seeds are planted, and they'll grow and they'll bloom for decades to come. At home, we've created nearly 17 million new jobs, more than any other single administration, a single term. More people have health care than ever before. And overseas, we've strengthened NATO. Ukraine is still free. And we pulled ahead of our competition with China, and so much more. I'm so proud of how much we've accomplished together for the American people. And I wish the incoming administration success, because I want America to succeed. That's why I've upheld my duty to ensure a peaceful and orderly transition of power, to ensure we lead by the power of our example. I have no doubt that America's in a position to continue to succeed. That's why my farewell address tonight, I want to warn the country of some things that give me great concern. And this is a dangerous concentration, and that's a dangerous concentration of power in the hands of a very few ultra-wealthy people. And the dangerous consequences if their abuse of power is left unchecked. Today, an oligarchy is taking shape in America of extreme wealth, power, and influence that literally threatens our entire democracy, our basic rights and freedoms, and a fair shot for everyone to get ahead. We see the consequences all across America, and we've seen it before, more than a century ago. But the American people stood up to the robber barons back then and busted the trusts. They didn't punish the wealthy. Just made the wealthy play by the rules everybody else had to. Workers want rights to earn their fair share. You know, they were dealt into the deal, and it helped put us on a path to building the largest middle class and the most prosperous century any nation in the world has ever seen. And we've got to do that again. In the last 4 years, that is exactly what we've done. People should be able to make as much as they can, but play by the same rules, pay their fair share of taxes. So much is at stake. Right now, the existential threat of climate change has never been clearer. Just look across the country, from California to North Carolina. That's why I signed the most significant climate and clean energy law ever in the history of the world, and the rest of the world is trying to model it now. It's working, creating jobs and industries of the future. Now, we've proven we don't have to choose between protecting the environment and growing the economy. We're doing both. The powerful forces want to wield their unchecked influence to eliminate the steps we've taken to tackle the climate crisis, to serve their own interest for power and profit. We must not be bullied into sacrificing the future of our children and our grandchildren. We must keep pushing forward and push faster. There's no time to waste. It's also clear that American leadership in technology is an unparalleled source of innovation that can transform lives. We see the same dangers of the concentration of technology, power, and wealth. You know, his farewell address, President Eisenhower spoke of the dangers of the military-industrial complex. He warned us then about, and I quote, the potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power, end of quote. Six decades later, I'm equally concerned about the potential rise of a tech-industrial complex that could pose real dangers for our country as well. Americans are being buried under an avalanche of misinformation and disinformation, enabling the abuse of power. The free press is crumbling. Editors are disappearing. Social media is giving up on fact-checking. The truth is smothered by lies told for power and for profit. We must hold the social platforms accountable to protect our children, our families, and our very democracy from the abuse of power. Meanwhile, artificial intelligence is the most consequential technology of our time, perhaps of all time. Nothing offers more profound possibilities and risk for our economy and our security, our society, for humanity. Artificial intelligence even has the potential to help us answer my call to end cancer as we know it. But unless safeguards are in place, AI could spawn new threats to our rights, our way of life, to our privacy, how we work and how we protect our nation. We must make sure AI is safe and trustworthy and good for all humankind. In the age of AI, it's more important than ever that the people must govern. And as the land of liberty, America, not China, must lead the world in the development of AI. You know, in the years ahead, it's going to be up to the president, the presidency, the Congress, the courts, the free press, and the American people to confront these powerful forces. We must reform the tax code, not by giving the biggest tax cuts to billionaires, but by making them begin to pay their fair share. We need to get dark money. That's that hidden funding behind too many campaign contributions. We need to get it out of our politics. We need to enact an 18-year term limit, for the strongest ethics reform and the strongest ethics reforms for our Supreme Court. We need to ban members of Congress from trading stock while they're in the Congress. We need to amend the Constitution to make clear that no president is immune from crimes that he or she commits while in office. The president's power is not limited. It's not absolute, and it shouldn't be. And in a democracy, there's another danger to the concentration of power and wealth. It erodes a sense of unity and common purpose. It causes distrust and division. Participating in our democracy becomes exhausting and even disillusioning. And people don't feel like they have a fair shot. We have to stay engaged in the process. I know it's frustrating. A fair shot is what makes America, America. Everyone's entitled to a fair shot. Not a guarantee, but just a fair shot. An even playing field. Going as far as your hard work and talent can take you. We can never lose that essential truth, remain who we are. I've always believed, and I've told other world leaders, America can be defined by one word, possibilities. Only in America do we believe anything is possible. Like a kid with a stutter from modest beginnings in Scranton, Pennsylvania, in Claymont, Delaware, sitting behind this desk in the Oval Office as President of the United States. That's the magic of America. It's all around us. Upstairs in the residence of the White House, I've walked by a painting of the Statue of Liberty I don't know how many times. In the painting, there's several workers climbing on the outstretched arm of the statue that holds the torch. It reminds me every day I pass it of the story and soul of our nation and the power of the American people. There's a story of a veteran. This is a veteran, a son of an immigrant, whose job was to climb that torch and polish the amber panes so rays of light could reach out as far as possible. He was known as the Keeper of the Flame. He once said of the Statue of Liberty, quote, speaks a silent universal language, one of hope, that anyone who seeks and speaks freedom can understand. Yes, we sway back and forth to withstand the fury of the storm, to stand the test of time. A constant struggle, a short distance between peril and possibility. But what I believe is the America of our dreams is always closer than we think. And it's up to us to make our dreams come true. Let me close by stating my gratitude to so many people, to the members of my administration, as well as public service and first responders across the country and around the world. Thank you for stepping up to serve. To our service members and your families, it's been the highest honor of my life to lead you as Commander-in-Chief. And of course, to Kamala and her incredible partner, the historic Vice President. She and Doug have become like family. And to me, family's everything. My deepest appreciation to our amazing First Lady who's with me in the Oval today. For our entire family. You're the love of my life and the life of my love. My eternal thanks to you, the American people. After 50 years of public service, I give you my word. I still believe in the idea for which this nation stands. A nation where the strength of our institutions and the character of our people matter and must endure. Now it's your turn to stand guard. May you all be the keeper of the flame. May you keep the faith. I love America. You love it too. God bless you all. May God protect our troops. Thank you for this great honor.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
While the nation honored slain civil rights leader Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on January 20th, President Donald Trump, newly inaugurated, ironically issued sweeping executive orders to revoke not only Biden-era diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, guidelines for all federal agencies, but also rolled back actions to protect minorities dating back to the 1960s, such as affirmative action, USA Today reports. The actions drew swift condemnation from Bernice King, Martin Luther King's daughter. She posted on social media, "This is what my father described in his book, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos Our Community," as white backlash. That's when any work in progress in the areas of racial justice and equity are met with assertions that no change is needed, with insistence that programs' purpose for preventing pervasive, historically anti-black policies and practices are harmful and unneeded, and with lies and distortion to convince people to curtail the work in progress. The civil rights leader's daughter continued. She noted that her father's dream encompassed, quote, eradicating racism, including in healthcare, policing, banking, and education, adding, "We have not done that, so don't attribute canceling DEI to wanting to honor MLK. DEI programs aim to assure that people of all backgrounds are welcome and have resources to succeed, regardless of race, color, or gender orientation. It differs from affirmative action programs, which have a goal of remedying historical injustices through preferential hiring practices. Trump's order claims that DEI has corrupted federal institutions by, quote, replacing hard work, merit, and equality with a divisive and dangerous preferential hierarchy. His order to eliminate DEI will impact all levels of the federal government, including aviation, medical programs such as Medicare, federal law enforcement agencies, and more. The federal government employs over 2 million civilian workers, of whom the largest number, 147,000, are here in California, according to the Congressional Research Office. During Trump's first term, he issued executive orders to ban government contractors and federal agencies from offering diversity training, even setting up a tip line for whistleblowers to turn in employers who defied that order. Private sector employers may be targeted next, a Trump official told USA Today. Already, some private employers, notably Amazon and Meta, have announced that they are dropping or scaling back DEI programs. But some other companies are pushing back, such as Apple and Costco. Both have urged shareholders to reject anti-DEI proposals and argue that diversity initiatives are good for business. A USA Today investigation suggests the need for DEI remains. The study found that the top ranks of America's largest companies remain predominantly white and male. Civil rights leaders have voiced outrage over Trump's latest actions. Reverend Al Sharpton, who's president of the National Action Network, said at the Metropolitan AME Church, a historic black church near the White House in Washington, D.C., "We have DEI because you denied us diversity. You denied us equity. You denied us inclusion. DEI was a remedy to the racial institutional bigotry practiced in academia and in these corporations," the Reverend Sharpton concluded. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
A federal judge has issued a temporary restraining order to block President Donald Trump's executive order banning birthright citizenship. U.S. District Judge John Coffenor, who was appointed by conservative Republican President Ronald Reagan, calls Trump's order blatantly unconstitutional, Associated Press reports. The case was filed by a coalition of states led by Washington. Plaintiffs argue that the Constitution's 14th Amendment and Supreme Court case law have cemented birthright citizenship. The judge's order applies nationwide while this and other cases are litigated and appealed. At least 5 lawsuits have been filed over the issue by 22 states, including California, as well as by immigrant rights groups and the American Civil Liberties Union. Trump's order seeks to end citizenship from being issued to children born in the U.S. if their parents are not in the U.S. legally. In addition, his order would prohibit citizenship from children born to a mother who is in the U.S. on a temporary and legal basis, such as student, work, or tourist visas, unless the father is a citizen or lawful permanent resident. The order would have taken effect starting February 19th and apply to children born on or after that date. Trump's order is in direct contradiction to the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment, which states, quote, "All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States." Trump's order contends that children of undocumented immigrants, as well as those born to mothers here on a temporary basis, are not subject to U.S. jurisdiction. The 14th Amendment was adopted after the Supreme Court's ruling in the controversial Dred Scott case back in 1857, in which justices held that children of slaves were not entitled to citizenship. So Congress remedied that. After passage of the 14th Amendment, a later Supreme Court case in 1898 ruled that Wong Kim Ark, an American citizen born in San Francisco, was wrongly denied reentry to the U.S. after a trip abroad, and the court affirmed the Chinese-American man's right to citizenship. California Attorney General Rob Bonta said in a press release that Trump's order is un-American, would strip tens of thousands of children born each year of citizenship rights, and put states at risk of losing federal funds for programs such as Medicaid, which are conditioned on citizenship status of those served. Such actions would cause irreparable harm to the states and their residents, Bonta concludes. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.